okay for me. I enjoyed it.
Good. It was great.
I hope we made all kinds of nonsense, you know.
Well, I think there was a lot of good connections. It is furthering Alan's research for his book.
Oh God, no! It is, but it's not. It's I'm actually at this point. I'm more interested in the sinks for the book than for the research. Like, Michael, I just need to say. I mean, like, it was really important to me what you said in there because I'll be honest. With this book, I've kind of gotten myself into a rabbit hole where it's impossible not. It's like the. You know, it's like you're flying, you either fly too close to the sun or too close to the ocean, right? So it's like I feel this intense gravity of the conspiracy just revisiting 9/11, revisiting all this stuff. It's like I really feel this intense draw of the conspiracy. And I kind of keep having to say to myself, it's like, well, of course, like this is synchronicity, but. This other stuff, this can't be coincidence, you know? And then I love how you just sort of like, say, like these impossible sinks where it's like, you know, that you got the receipt fell out of the book within the book of something falling out with the same last name as your last name. And
that was crazy.
Yeah. So I just needed to be reminded of these sort of impossible, seemingly impossible, just to remember that. There was a way, I don't know. Like I said, I still feel like somebody had to, you know, it's like my point with the conspiracy is like somebody has, JFK, somebody has to pull the trigger. So there's at least a conspiracy of that much. But unless you go pure solipsism and it's all in our fucking heads.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. It is all in our fucking heads, but that doesn't mean it's not real.
Right, right.
So that's what's so hard. It's like, so I feel my reality has gotten so brutal lately and just so unpleasant that I don't want to be responsible for it. I don't want to, it's like, I don't want to be culpable for how horrible everything has gotten, but that's where I'm ending up. It's like, okay, well, I'm going to have to turn this around now. I don't know if I can finish your book, Alan.
That's okay. Can I ask how far you got?
Not very far. No. But because I got so, like, I just was walking into the darkness of room 237, and then it's like, who's responsible for this? What am I doing? What am I doing? And how would I get out of the darkness? And then I found, like, this different avenue that's considering similar thought, but then like with hope maybe, or like something that I can hold on to and feel. Maybe that's it. It's just completely letting go to the abyss.
Well,
yeah, I don't know. I had the only thing that's really keeping me going lately is dreams. I'll be quite honest. I mean, likes that really make me feel good, and because I've been having some really awesome, great dreams, and so it's almost like, oh, the worse things get, the better my dreams get. That was really weird, but I had this one dream where I had this dream where, okay, let me start from the beginning. Alan Moore describes this place called the Blazing World in League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. It's basically this fourth dimensional space where time, you can, where you experience time as, and it's as easily reached as if the way we as three-dimensional creatures can, you know, just walk across the street or go in a three-dimensional, you know, area. And so it's this fourth-dimensional realm where you actually have control of time. You could actually go to, you know, as a metaphor, you could go to any page in the book and check it out and enjoy it. And so I had this dream that this reality started to bubble up in the world. And it was literally like little soap bubbles that grew up out of the ground and became larger and larger and encapsulated entire cities eventually. And inside the soap bubbles was this wonderful, very magical, free place, much like I think of, you know, the Blazing World or the Neverending Story or Oz or whatever. And then outside it was, you know, 3D reality. It was a great dream. I mean, really amazing.
Earlier, you know, when Doug, during the call, Doug used this expression, or the metaphor of opening the book to any page, I thought was just, God, just the greatest thing. The idea that you could, that was the metaphor for the now versus time travel. It's like, of course, the book is always existing, but you can turn anywhere, and once you read it, you're in that now. Okay, I found what I was looking for. Michael, you mentioned this idea of bubbles. There's an image from Manly P. Hall that I was trying to find while you were talking. His image of Hermes, and it's basically the same idea. It's Hermes standing on the dragon with these sort of bubbles, these sort of soap bubbles rising up. It's almost like a crystal ball. I'm thinking, you know, back.
Oh, right.
I don't know. It's sort of visual struck me as really interesting.
That's cool. I don't know. I think that we're on. I hate to be like all crazy, but it seems like everyone is sort of coming to this conclusion all at once.
Oh God, yes, yes. But, you know, I swear. Earlier in the week, last week I was writing about Martin Luther King and 2001 Space Odyssey. The next day, there was a post from a Ferris Moon did a post about Martin Luther King and 2001 Space Odyssey. Then I was writing about the Millennium Hilton being misspelled. The same night, You put up a post with the Millennium Hilton being misspelled. Goro Adachi, I don't know if you've seen his latest post, this transit ritual post. He just did this big thing.
And it's okay.
That was so funny because you know, Goro's a little sensitive about, oh, people are stealing his work, right? So I just looked at it like last night or the night before, and there was so much in there from a post I had just done. And I was like, oh my God, let me check the dates. I was like, because if he put this up first, he's going to be like, this guy ripped me off. So I checked the dates, and he actually put it up like the day before me. So I was like, oh, fuck, Goro's going to think I stole it from him. But whatever someone's personal feelings aside, then I get like a text message from Will Morgan going like, oh, my God, I just saw, you know, this movie that's everything we're talking about. And everyone's just seems to be freaking out because if this is what the quote-unquote singularity is, let me tell you something. It's like everyone is hitting the same note. It is intense. It is really intense that everyone is hitting the same note at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, it is. It's like, it's really something.
Yeah.
I don't know. And so I've been thinking about this singularity as, you know, a gate, you know, and the Stargate and this idea of a temporary gate, you know, it's opening and then it's going to close again. And it's like, is the idea that you jump through when it's open? And is, you know, kind of like the carrot and the stick, because the 3D world is, you know, going to hell in a handbasket. And is the idea to try to jump through? I don't know.
It's an excellent question. Yeah, I mean, that's ultimately... You know, earlier in the call, you guys talked about this idea of when you were talking about Ishmael, you said the idea of, you know, civilizations failing because they were out of sync with nature. And I turned to Melissa and I said, it seems to me that civilizations fail because they are a part of nature, and nature goes through cycles. You know, nothing lasts forever in nature. Nothing physical, nothing tangible lasts forever. So there's this, you know, constant cycles of growth and decay that I think civilization has to fall into. So in that respect, I saw civilization as something that naturally would decay, and then something else will rise up out of that, and so on. I just saw this as a very natural thing. But when you talk about this idea of, is this an illusionary, you know, system? Or, I mean, on the very grand scale, you know, not just, it's nonsense that we, use paper money, or that we pay taxes, or that we, you know, all of these illusions. Is it more of a really big, like, illusion? And I don't know. That's why I dropped in that thing about the Truman Show disorder. But it seems to kind of go to this idea of the Valis loop and all these sort of things. You know,
yeah.
Is it really something you're trapped in? That seems like, if you're wrong about that, that seems like a really dangerous and seems like a really dangerous and unpleasant mindset to be in. I mean, if you can get out of it, then great. But if you can't, do you have to make the most of this experience? Because if you can't get out of it, I don't know. It's a really dangerous road, I just feel like.
Yeah, I don't have any answers, you know. I've been continuing on my League of Extraordinary Gentlemen journey, and I just read the final book, which is actually his last book is called Century, and he's divided it into three books, and so he's only got two out. The third one is yet to be written. But the second book is set in 1969, and it's really, really dark. And I was feeling all great about everything a couple days ago, and now he's just got me all depressed again. Because he runs with this whole Aleister Crowley is creating the Antichrist, and he's like this horrible black magician, and on and on and on. And he basically is channeling, you know, this these horrible conspiracy theories that, you know, we read about, or at least I've read about before, you know. And I don't know. It's just depressed me.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's, like I said, I'm in a very similar place. It's like, if I want to talk about the synchronicities around JFK, then you can't avoid at least going into the conspiracies, and then, like I said, I find that there's just this really weird overlap where it gets really murky as to what is intentional and what is unintentional. So that's what I'm saying. Like, it's obviously someone pulled the trigger, so this is a conspiracy. But then all these, like when we talked about, Michael, you weren't on the call yet, the idea that a Ferris Moon had put up this post where she showed DOE Plaza, where JFK gets shot, actually looks exactly like a trident. It looks exactly like the trident from the World Trade Center.
Are you kidding?
Well, you mentioned everyone's hitting the same note. Yes. And then I think of the tuning fork.
Right.
With your trident. It's not the same, but it is a similar structure and shape.
Right. Right.
And so, and it's that resonance where we're getting in harmony with one another, you know, so we're vibrating, if not at the same frequency, within the same resonance, so that we're all vibrating.
Oh my God. So think about it. What I thought about was, I broke my book up basically into three main sections. JFK, so it's JFK, 9/11, and the Osama bin Laden killing. So of course I'm in really dark territory, but
all over, yeah.
But what I realized is Dealey Plaza is a trident. The World Trade Center Tynes are a trident. And the what I'm actually calling the Triple Crown, the Osama bin Laden killing, is that same week was also CERN. Now, what does CERN have outside but Shiva, right? The big statue of Shiva outside CERN. So when Doug just said that we're all sort of resonating the same thing, it made me think, if CERN, you know, you amp up the power on CERN. Again, this is like an external thing. This is probably, you know, just throwing it against the wall, whatever. You ramp up the power on CERN, this giant fucking thing. What if we're, and with this with Shiva outside, what if we're all kind of feeling this resonance of that tuning fork, for lack of a better term, that vibration? Does that make any sense?
And what's funny is that there's actually a conspiracy with vibration where the world tunes everything to A440. But there's a move to tune everything to A432, which is the number of the goddess. And so, like, we're out of sync with... That's one of those thoughts that we need to resonate at a lower vibration.
That's so funny. That's so funny. I didn't know that.
We need to get in sync with the...
Yeah.
432 is more in sync with our body and our natural rhythms. And Joseph Campbell even made a kind of similar argument that the number 432 ends up appearing in various different mythologies.
Huh. I just thought it was like counting backwards or something. That's interesting.
Right. 4, 3, 2, 1, blast off, right?
Yeah. 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 Well, you know, I was thinking, though, since... I had this hilarious idea again about the World Trade Center and how, you know, and how the whole amazing conspiracy about who did it, you know, who done it is like this thing. And nobody knows. Everybody has their own idea of what actually happened. And so I was thinking that if it's a book, if it's like a mythic book, is what actually happened is that, like, you know, two giant dragons with pitchforks came down and stabbed those buildings and they fell down. That's what happened in the book, you know, in the big blazing world version of it, or something like that. But then when it gets translated into our reality, as, you know, the dragons become airplanes and, you know, these things get shifted and moved around, but it's the same story, but it's told in a more concrete way that we can, you know, that we experience.
Yeah.
And then I was thinking, I read this line a few months ago about someone was saying you can have it. He was an artist or somebody, a craftsman. He said, well, you can have it done quickly, or you can have it done well, but you can't have it both. And so I thought, what if, like, the World Trade Center was like done quickly? It was like in the subconscious, like had to get it done. And that's why it's such a crappy job, because all these things are, you know, filtering through that we see, and we're going, all these anomalies, we're just going, what the hell?
Yes, yeah, I loved in your post how you wrote, you know, if this is the ritual, this is the big ritual to bring it all in, and they couldn't even spell check, you know, they didn't even get the spelling on Millennium Hilton correct. You know, how can we trust, you know, what everyone is in such fear of this massive ritual, but we don't, you know, either fear or awe or both. But if they didn't get the spelling right, you know, how good of a job did they do? But I wrote something last night which I thought was crazy, and I was contemplating deleting. But the when you just said about this idea of these dragons and the true story, there is, on September 11th, there actually was a hurricane, Hurricane Erin, which was right off the coast. I mean, you look at the NASA satellite, it's like huge hurricane right off of New York and D.C. You can go to NASA's website and see images of Hurricane Erin. And it's like, wait a second, that was right there? And
I never heard anything about that.
Yeah. So
not a thing.
So, well, there is a... I found this through Judy Wood. She does, I mean, she's this woman who, she has this theory that it's like this weird energy weapon was used to disintegrate the buildings, and that's why it like actually almost creates this strange vortex, and that's why this hurricane essentially came out of nowhere. And if you watch, now, so it's an interesting theory, but just taking it symbolically for a moment, if you look at the trajectory of Hurricane Erin, it's crazy. It inches its way up along the coast. It's actually, sorry, speeds its way along the coast, and then it arrives on the morning of September 11th and then just stops, and it just sits there. And then on September 12th, it just turns around, makes like a fucking 90-degree angle, and just leaves. And I wrote this thing of like, it's as if it like just came, stood, watched over the ritual or watched over the event. Like, you know, this sort of anthropomorphized vision of this thing just like arriving to watch.
Right.
And or to take part or something. Like, it just, when you look at the maps of it, it's really intense. And I thought, I have to delete that because someone's going to think I'm just crazy that I'm, you know, thinking that this hurricane is something.
Representing a sentient thing or something, yeah.
But it's either way, it's pretty incredible. Yeah, it's just.
I love the research you do that you found that out, and that other one that you realized that the constellation of Horus was directly overhead, you know, New York City at the time of, you know, 9-1-1, and that freaked me out there for a while. So,
well, my hope, Alan, is that you can get all of that. So I know that oftentimes a lot of us, when we're blogging, we're trying to include everything, you know, so like there's the main node that you're working on a post, but then you realize how it connects to everything else. And that if you try and put it all in, it will destroy you because you can't, I mean, how do you put it all in? Like, that's creating a universe. And so it feels like you're doing a little bit of universe building with the Suicide Kings. And so I'm hoping that somehow every time you bump into the new thing, it's like, oh, wow, this connects to everything that I've ever done. It's like, well, I hope you have good records so that you can include it all. So that it's all, I mean, so it's like, I know it's all there. It's just, can you do it? Can you do Finnegan's Wake? Can you do Black Dossier? What Michael was talking about, how everything is in the book, which is in the book in the book.
Yeah, I know. I know. That's. I don't want this to be about my book. But just to say, but I realized that, and that's why I've basically stripped it down to like three. It's the three major things. Like the nodes I really wanted to hit: JFK 9/11 and the Osama bin Laden thing. It's like those are the three main things, and other stuff I wanted. Like, yeah, it's there is definitely a temptation to build a universe or to lay it all out. And it kind of made me crazy for a while. I'll be completely honest. It made me crazy because now I have 200 pages of just notes.
Oh, God. Yeah.
You know, and it's like I can't do that. You know, that's it's insanity. So it's just a lot of trimming fat and tossing away the unnecessary and like really hitting the main points. So that's all. That's excellent advice. I wish you had told it to me a month ago because I had to come through that through my own struggle.
Sure. That makes perfect sense. I mean, it's endless. I mean, you could then go to Lincoln and all the crazy synchronicities between the death of JFK and the death of Lincoln. And I mean, just, I don't know. It's fascinating stuff.
Well, it seems to me, this is why, like, when you guys talk about this idea of this sort of repeated cycle, the monomyth. I think like we're all seeing it, and you know, this is again, we're all seeing the same thing. You know, Wrong Way Wizard is talking about we're trapped in this Valis loop, and you know, Jason's stuck in the monomyth, and we're all sort of talking about this idea of it's definitely we're noticing the cycle. We're definitely noticing how it's repeating and how it sort of operates. That just, I think the question is. What I came to the other day was that it's all a decision of, is it something you're trying to escape or something you're trying to experience? You know, it's all,
yeah.
It's that I think ultimately defines your reaction to it. You know, all the sort of Gnostic point of view of you're trying to escape this matrix, or is it, no, okay, you know, like Doug's book, Winter's Labyrinth, is paying homage to the seasons, you know, it's like saying there's natural cycle. So you're going to have winter and then you're going to have some, you know, it's like to say, oh my God, we're trapped in this cycle. It's like, yeah, no shit. Guess what? Winter's coming. So put on a coat.
But my book screwing up the seasons right now.
Yeah. Oh my God. It's freezing here in New York. We were last week. It was like,
someone started
and now it's freezing.
Out of sync with the season. So
Doug, it's all your
fault. I know. And it's been freezing here too for the last 2 days, and it's pouring down rain. So there's no viewing Venus at all right here.
Same here, where we had like 88 degree weather yesterday, 89 degree weather, and then at dusk, you know, the temperature drops 30 degrees, the dust storm hits, all the trees all over across town fall over. They're not falling over. You know, so we have this 60 mile an hour windstorm that blows down historic trees because they're not flexible enough.
Yeah.
You know, the winds change your blowing, and unless you can
bend like the willow,
your roots are going to get pulled out from underneath you, and you're going to, that's what happened yesterday.
Speaking of, I need to go to the cold.
Okay.
Well, Doug, since you're not going to finish Happy Creatures, I'll just tell you that it does end on a slightly happy note. And it doesn't matter to me. What I was going to say, though, I just wanted to say is it's funny because the book ends with that same idea of. When I was in Japan with Melissa, we went to this little museum with her grandparents, and it was this guy. I don't remember what the deal was with this guy. He was like, he was a gymnast. This gymnast ends up doing like a backflip and ending up paralyzed. So he's completely paralyzed, and he's in the hospital, and he's like depressed and wants to kill himself, but he can't even do that. So then he decides to. He asked his mother to put a paintbrush in his mouth, and the only thing he could move was his mouth, so he starts painting, and just painting with his lips. And he starts doing these, like, over many years, he makes these beautiful paintings. So there's a whole museum dedicated to this guy who just is paralyzed and paints with a paintbrush in his mouth. And he writes this poetry to it, and all his poetry, all his images are of flowers, and all his poetry is, like, you know, it's kind of dark, but at the same time, like, uplifting of, like, yeah, life sucks. I was a fucking gym. Like, you know, he said, of course, it's, like, not saying it in so many words, but it's, like, oh, my God, I was a gymnast, and now I'm a, you know, vegetable. You know, not a vegetable, but, obviously, you know, now I'm immobilized, and, like, how painful and devastating that is, and yet how beautiful it is at the same time. And so there's this poem where he's basically talks about the weed, and he says, yes, you're weak, but that's why you're going to survive, because the strong twigs, you know, the strong ones snap. I guess it's, again, probably a reference to his bones and all this sort of stuff, but saying, you know, the strong plants, if you step on them, they just break off. But the cottonweed, you step on it and it just bends. And then it takes a few days, but then it can rise up again because it bent rather than snapping off. It's that idea of staying fluid, you know, not staying fluid to change rather than trying to stand so hard against it that it just rips you to pieces.
I can sort of see that in, well, you know, just everywhere where there's this, that reactionary attitude to, you know, dig in and fight and, well, you know, whatever you think is, you know, you need to fight against. And I feel that too sometimes, you know, so.
Can I ask you, Michael, let's bring this back to you. I know for you, I always find it interesting is there seems to be a temptation in you or like a leaning in your writings to take it in that direction where you're, it's not that you're certainly not a reactionary and it's not about quote unquote fighting. Sorry, but you're also not a, in any way, a pushover. You know, you'll do these posts, and then suddenly there'll be something that just pisses you off, and you're not afraid to write the post that says, "This really fucking pisses me off." Where a lot of people avoid that. They're just trying to like, "Oh, it's sync, it's beautiful, everything's perfect." You're not afraid to come out and say, "Yeah, but this is fucked up."
Yeah, I do that quite a bit. Yeah. Less than I try to tone it down for the blog. You should see my personal blog. I just got rants, you know? And so, yeah, there's this anger part of me that is definitely there. I don't know.
It's not a bad thing. That's what I'm saying is, you know,
that's kind of why I identify with Nemo so much because he's a pissed off motherfucker, you know, and he, so I enjoy the idea of having this, oh man, if I only had my own super powerful, you know, underwater submarine weapon thing, you know, man, I'd blast them. You know, it's a very comic book, but it's lucky that I don't have that.
Well, actually, but isn't the other part of your, what you're coming to is that you kind of do, your subconscious. This is the other thing is that you, when you realize that these, you know, sort of weapons of mass destruction are elements of your own mind, you know, that your subconscious is so powerful. That's another thing I notice recurring in your blog is the idea that you're always, how powerful it is and that you kind of do have a super-powered submarine subconscious that is as every bit as devastating as, you know, something the military can create.
Right. I just don't know how to really make it work, properly. but yeah, I do think that we all, I'm coming to that conclusion that we all have this subconscious ability, power that actually is what's molding our 3D reality, you know, and like Doug says, isn't that kind of scary to think that we're the ones actually in charge of everything? I mean, no wonder everything's so fucked up.
Well, I've gone back and forth so many times, and then this is this leads us right back to Jake and Jim's All Joy All the Time. You know, so maybe there's something there that we need to start. I don't know. So it's like I want to fade. If I'm feeling like I need to look into room 237, and that's actually a mirror into the darkness of my soul. It's like you were talking about your dreaming life being better than your waking life right now. You know, and so like there's this whole duality to everything we touch and talk about. And it seems like the people of us, you know, those of us who have found like kinship in each other's thoughts, we're kind of like this middle pillar group where it's finding balance with the light and the dark, that you can't escape the darkness, that we need to harmonize our light and our dark and embrace both sides of this coin.
Oh, yeah. We're totally the – it's like I Heart Huckabees, where it's like you realize the gators are too light, you know, like when they see in I Heart Huckabees, and it's like, wait, these guys, their philosophy's too light and fluffy, and this philosophy's too dark. You realize that they're both – right in some ways, you just got to kind of synthesize
the conspiracy Yeah.
Right, the conspiracy is too dark, but I feel like I feel like the old joy all the time is kind of sometimes gets to be, you know, it's like that putting your fingers in the ear like ma 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 ma, I can't hear you, you know, it's not happening. I know from a personal level that there's, even if we all agreed that, you know, hey, we told Alan Moore, don't write any more dark stories, and Stanley Kubrick's dead, and everybody just writes, you know, fluffy puppy dog unicorn stories for the rest of existence, it doesn't make bad things go away, you know? So we can't just pretend. It was something I actually thought about, Michael, you said, when I said you about having your superpowered submarine, you said, well, I wish I knew how to use it better. And I thought that in every movie, you know, the, like Will Smith on Independence Day, he gets the alien spaceship and he just knows how to operate it, right? Of course. Every time they end up with some totally alien super weapon, they just know how to use it. And the truth is that you have to figure out. Right. It's a long, drawn-out process. This is why people meditate and why people try and develop, you know, for over many years, these skills, is because it's not something you could just walk into and operate on the first day. And it seems like to live in a fantasy where you can watch on the screen where the guy jumps into the spaceship and can fly it on the first day, it actually is a lot longer and drawn out process than that. I don't know if that, if you see it the same way.
Light.
Yes, exactly.
Focusing on the light versus dark, you know, and it's like, yeah, I've read somewhere that some theorist was, you know, tuning into the whole yin yang thing, you're saying that all these assholes who are having everybody meditate on peace, they're the ones who are causing the war. Because there has to be a reaction to all this peace thinking. So, which I thought was.
Have you ever seen The Secret?
Funny.
Did you ever see that Secret movie? The, like, Law of Attraction. It's terrible, but I'm just curious if you've ever seen it.
Oh, yeah, sure.
There's a scene.
I have not seen it.
There's a scene in there where they talk about going to an anti-war protest and all the people at the anti-war protest going like, no war, no war. It was saying that the universe doesn't understand between yes war and no war. All it understands is war. So when you go out and protest war, you're actually drawing it to you. And on one level, that kind of really pissed me off. Like, fuck you. Don't promote the idea that you know, just go. Like, the whole movie is like, just think about how much you want your Corvette. Don't think about, you know, anti-war. Just think about how much you want your Corvette. But at the same time, I also thought on a metaphysical level that perhaps there was some truth to it. That perhaps focusing on something does draw it closer to you, even if it's thinking how much you don't want something. You know, sometimes the things I worry about are the things that you kind of manifest, you know?
There's some element of truth, I think, in that whole philosophy, but I think it's somehow personally fucked up, too. I don't know. It's just my feeling about it. Because it kind of puts to blame for everything on, you know, on yourself, and I think, and specifically, like, well, if you, you know, if you're paraplegic, it's because you must have done something to cause that car to run into you. Too bad, because that's what you wanted, you know. And the other is like, and then, you know, the incredibly rich asshole is doing just what he wants in order to get. You know, he's got it all figured out. The universe is working the way he wants it, you know. And I don't know, that doesn't work very well for me.
No, same. Well, same.
Speaking of the rich asshole, right? So my book ended up in the book, right? So Elder Diarmid was in the store, and then I confronted him, and he said, "You're so negative," and then I hand him the book to show him that maybe there's some joy in my life.
Yeah.
But it's like, he's right. I mean, is it all my fault? Am I the one, am I the stagnation in the flow? Am I the Hitler and not him? You know, so who's really the emperor in the situation? And I keep coming back to Chief Joseph, you know, I will fight no more forever. Can I just, am I going to have to let go?
What
does that mean?
Yeah.
Oh, I was trying to not interrupt you while you were speaking. Because Michael's voice got all weird, if you just, like, basically under Michael's icon, hang up on him and then bring him right back in, it should fix the audio. It happens sometimes on Skype.
Zip-rider, zip-rider, everyone's a winner, bargains galore. That's right, you too can be the proud owner. The quality goes in before that name goes on. One-tenth of a dollar, one-tenth of a dollar. We got service after the sale. How about perfume? We got perfume. How about an engagement ring? Some for the little lady, some for the little lady, some for the little lady. $3-$4. We got a year-end clearance. We got our white sale and a smoke-damaged furniture. You can drive it away today. Act now, and receive as our gift to you. They come in all colors, one size fits all. No muss, no fuss, no spills. You tired of kitchen drudgery? Everything must go. Going out of business, going out of business, going out of business. Sale. 50% off original retail price. Skip the middleman. Don't settle for less. How do we do it? How do we do it? Volume, volume. Turn up the volume. Now you heard it advertised. Don't hesitate. Don't be caught with your drawers down. Don't be caught with your drawers down. You can step right up. Step right up. That's right. It fillets and chops and dices and slices. Never stops. Lasts a lifetime. Mows your lawn. And it mows your lawn. And it picks up the kids from school. It gets rid of unwanted facial hair. It gets rid of embarrassing age spots. It delivers a pizza. And it lengthens. And it strengthens. And it finds that slipper that's been at large under the chaise lounge for several weeks. Plays a mean rhythm master. It makes excuses for unwanted lipstick on your collar. And it's only a dollar. Step right up. It's only a dollar. Step right up. Cause it forges your signature. Not completely satisfied. Mail back unused portion of product for complete refund of price of purchase. Step right up. Please allow 30 days for delivery. Don't be fooled by cheap imitations. You can live in it. Living it, laughing it, loving it, swimming it, sleeping it, living it, swimming it, laughing it, loving it, removes embarrassing stains from contour sheets. That's right. And it entertains visiting relatives. It turns a sandwich into a banquet. Tired of being the life of the party. Change your shorts, change your life, change your life. Change into a 9-year-old Hindu boy. Get rid of your wife. And it walks your dog. And it doubles on sacks. Doubles on sacks. You can jump back, Jack. See you later, alligator. See you later, alligator. It gets rid of your gambling debts. It quits smoking. It's a friend. It's a companion. It's the only product you will ever need. Follow these easy assembly instructions. It never needs ironing. Well, it takes weights off hips, bust, thighs, chin, midriff, gives you dandruff. And it finds you a job. It is a job. And it strips the phone company free, takes in for trial exchange. And it gives you denture breath. And you know it's a friend. And it's a companion. And it gets rid of your traveler's checks. It's new, it's improved, it's old-fashioned. Well, it takes care of business. Never needs binding, never needs binding, never needs binding. Gets rid of blackheads, heartbreakers, psoriasis. Christ, you don't know the meaning of heartbreak, buddy. Come on, come on. Come on, come on. Cause it's effective, it's defective. It creates household odors. It disinfects, it sanitizes for your protection. It gives you an erection, it wins the election. Why put up with painful coins any longer? It's a redeemable coupon, no obligation, no salesman will visit your home. We got a jackpot, jackpot, jackpot. Prizes, 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 all work guaranteed. How do we do it? 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 We need your business. We're going out of business. We'll give you the business. Get on the business end of our going out of business sale. Receive our free brochure. Free brochure. Read the easy to follow assembly instructions. Batteries not included. Send before midnight tomorrow. Terms available. Step right up. Step right up. Step right up. You got it, buddy. A large print giveth and a small print taketh away. Step right up. You can step right up. You can step right up. Come on, step right up. Get away from me, can you, boy? Step right up. Step right up. Step right up.
Alan, I was just saying how it's the idea of conceiving, externalizing the shadow.
Right.
And you were talking about a rich effort, because that is the person, you know, Elder Diarmid, the name means free man. And so what is it that makes one a free man? And in this instance, it's poignant because here's this rich guy who's telling everyone how the world should be. And the reason why he can do that is because he doesn't have to have a job, because he's wealthy enough to be have the luxury of thinking that he knows what's best for everyone.
Now, I'm sorry, whose name means free man?
Diarmid. But the actor who played the Emperor, and this is where the name, why I use that name, is Mick Diarmid, right? So you have this Irish guy who played Emperor Palpatine in the Star Wars mythology, and his actual name is Ian McDiarmid.
And you're telling me that Diarmid means free man? Where
yes.
did you find that?
I just looked that up. And so, like, I'm trying to find a replacement for Lionheart, mm-hmm. right? And I'm thinking about the archetype. You know, what is the archetype here? And it's the Emperor, because the Emperor is the one who's really manipulating things from behind the scenes. But it was just interesting to me that the actor who portrays the Emperor, his name means, you know, son of a free man or something to that effect. I don't know what Mick means.
Yeah, so that's fascinating because, so the Emperor, all right, like here's what I'm trying to figure out, and I don't mean to take this in a conspiratorial standpoint, but just I'm going to throw this out there. Melissa and I have been watching Twin Peaks. I know you and Jason had done it a while ago. I wasn't able to do it back then. But so I'm kind of trying to catch up, and we're watching Twin Peaks now in the towards the beginning of season two. Anyway, basically, Michael and I had had a conversation about how when Alan Moore presents Crowley as the bad guy, he presents the Masons as the bad guys. All over League of Extraordinary Gentlemen are evil Masons. Now, in Twin Peaks, one of the killers keeps flashing a 3-3 domino, keeps flashing the number 33, and he's like this bad guy, secret bad guy. So, and then there's the owls are not what they seem, which of course makes me think of Bohemian Grove, that Bob is actually like an owl, this predatory owl. And then you even have, of course, the Black Lodge and the sort of Masonic floor. Now, if you're telling me that the Emperor from Star Wars, his name is Freeman, is crazy because...
Oh, that's the Freemason, the Freeman
right,
to be a Mason,
you have to be a free man, is what they say. So mm-hmm. just this, there's this weird overtone of, you know, some of the greatest work laying out, kind of pointing a finger at this conspiracy, not so subtly.
Yeah, especially with Alan Moore. He's got these, I mean, and it's all, he like puts all the Masonic symbolism all over, you know, MI5 and all that, you know, like don't, you know, and he puts their outfits, you know, they've all got these huge compass and square emblems all over everything, their cars, you know, and so he's like saying, he said, this is the secret that's not so secret. And then, of course, the weird thing that Crowley was involved with Secret Service with England, right. You know, back in the day.
Right, exactly.
So, and then James Bond is this sort of, you know, this very popular version of like the good Secret Service guy, but Alan Moore portrays Bond as a homicidal jerk, rapist type.
Yeah, so. It's really, I mean, you know, again, is it like taking something and turning it on its head for a sort of like, you know, as a storyteller that would be appealing, or just, you know, say an Alan Moore writing a story where it's like, well, you know, who could be the bad guys, you know, or sort of like if this is based on all this other writing, well, there's this whole genre of writing about conspiracy. So is it playing up that idea or turning it on its head, or is it literally trying to point a finger, like you said, to a not-so-secret secret power structure?
Yeah, I mean, I just don't know. What you made me think, though, was, okay, the free men are, you know, part of this conspiracy, but then remember how we've got that goes directly to the King Kill thing is the golden bow and the the idea that the next king, it has to be a runaway slave. So we've got this dichotomy between the runaway slave and then these free men going.
Well, yeah, and you know, I think you know, there's a danger in putting a negative spin on being a free man. Of course, we all want to be free men and women.
Oh, yeah.
But I think there's also a danger there in, you know, confusing the two. You know, it's like, of course, we want to be free men. I don't know. It's I like your idea of like, we might, you know, sometimes I think the idea that the slave that becomes the king, what I noticed is like, even in, you know, what does Moses do? This is the sort of thing that really pisses me off. What does Moses do? Right. Here's a bunch of slaves. Moses says, all right, we're going to free the slaves. Let's get out of here. And then he goes up on a mountain and comes down and says, all right, here's the law. And you could actually beat your slave. Just don't, like, beat them so bad that they die or that, you know, that they lose teeth or eyeballs. But you can beat them. Just don't beat them that bad. Now,
right.
It would seem to me that here, this is another example of meet the new boss, same as the old boss. Of, like, there's this cycle of we notice there's a tyrant, we rise up, and it's, so it's always like the slave or the underclass, the lower class, rises up to take it over and, you know, to tear it down, and then they end up becoming the tyrants. So I think there's also a danger in that, that we, of course, want to get rid of this power structure, but we don't want to replace it with an equally abusive power structure. You know, if we're going to seize power for ourselves, which we should, of course, learn to be sovereign and to be and to treat ourselves well and to have power. I don't think power is a bad thing. I just mean there's always the inherent danger of, in, you know, just becoming the tyrant after you overthrow it.
Right. And I'd say the United States is this classic example of trying to create a better society, and, you know, based out of, you know, coming out of you know, the corruption and bad shit of Europe. So, and everyone has always pointed out how it's been a Freemasonic enterprise from the very beginning. So, you know, I don't necessarily consider Masons to be evil or bad.
Nor do I. I've been talking to this guy, Frater X. I did his radio show twice, and we had a long conversation basically about, you know, there's always seems to be this sort of duality, and his whole thing is just purely from the almost political nuts and bolts of things, is that he said there was this Masonic tradition, and then there was the Scottish Rite, as you know, as opposed to the York Rite. The Scottish Rite kind of comes in, and he referred to them as basically like the IMF. They were the ones who put a lot of the Masonic lodges in debt, and then basically said, well, you owe us a lot of money, I guess, you know, we'll take your land and we're going to change your rule books and all this sort of stuff. And the same way, like that same sort of playbook that the IMF does in third world nations, he said the Scottish Rite did to basically, you know, take over Masonic lodges throughout the United States and to kind of change things under their control. So I just think it's very interesting that this sort of internal power structure, and of course we can take that to the, you know, an obvious like Jedi Sith comparison or something of, I think even, you know, again, that's us, right? Is this sort of strange sync community where you have the guys who are like, yeah, you know, sync's bullshit, it's all this conspiracy and these sorcerers and everything's very negative, and then the other group that's like, oh, everything's beautiful and puppy dogs and oh my god, look at that horrible war propaganda. Look, it actually says taco flavor, you know, and which, you know, I don't mean that as a swipe against Jake, because I actually thought that was hilarious. But my point is, like, there does seem to be a tendency to break things down into duality. I think what I like about your work is that you, instead of coming across as schizo of like, or bipolar of like, oh, some days it's like I'm pissed off and some days everything's beautiful sync, you manage to sort of weave the two, that in a very, I mean, I think it's a very delicate dance for any human being to attempt, and you do that where you're not, you know, you sort of take both positions without seeming like you're contradicting yourself. That's how it seems to me, Doug. I don't know if you, whenever I read your site, Michael, I'm like, how the fuck does he do that? Because I feel like when I want to say something that I'm pissed off about, like, I always feel like people are gonna be like, well, I don't get this guy. He says everything's, you know, beautiful sync, and then how come he's pissed off about this? And then when I'm like, oh, but actually this is beautiful, I always feel like people are reading it as like, well, I don't get this guy. You know, if there's a conspiracy, how is this not part of that conspiracy? I always feel conflicted within myself, so maybe I'm projecting that. But I know when I read your work, I never feel that, like, or at least, like, if there is a conflicted nature, it's sort of on the surface as you sort of wear your heart on your sleeve and you say, like, I don't fucking know. This is like, there is both, and you just sort of seem comfortable with the paradox.
Yeah, I guess, that's funny to have your writing analyzed for you, because, you know, I just don't think of it as that way. I just do, you know, it just comes out, and I don't know, and I focus a lot on my own personal sinks because I trust them, you know, like the fucking, you know, receipt falling out of the book, you know, it's like, okay, aliens did that, I know that, but, you know, you know, and it's that really weird shit that you get, you know, like the Maserati for sale, and I'm going, oh my god, the submarines for sale, I just gotta make an offer, and I could, like, drive away in it, you know, and stuff like that, you know, is, I find it to be hilarious and like wicked at the same time, you know, like an evil laugh almost.
The thing that's interesting to me is how it seems like, well, okay, there's this quote that I read to Alan recently from Philip K. Dick that he says, "When I believe, I'm crazy. When I don't believe, I suffer psychotic depression."
Yeah.
And I had a moment where I didn't want, I mean, it was recent, and I think, Michael, you may have had the same moment where I didn't want to do the think anymore. I don't want to believe. It's too nutty. It doesn't make me, it's not something I want to build my house on. I want.
Right. It's not making me rich. It's not doing anything, you know, it's just.
And it's so fringe and outside the mainstream that it's like, I don't want to run with this crowd anymore. These people are crazy. I'm a normal person.
I am a normal person.
I am not. I'm not an animal. But when I, it's like this, the flip side, the psychotic depression. It's like, totally. It's like when I try and deny my sink savior, you know, it comes back to bite me. It's like, no, these personal sinks are too revealing and they're too solid. There's too much to not, they're too sound.
Yeah, I agree. And I kind of come into a little bit of peace about that with my own shit. And I just, you know, at least for me, when I get these crazy personal things that sinks that, you know, they make you laugh and they make you smile. They, you know, like Will Morgan was writing, you know, so we get joy from reading license plate numbers. I mean, it's like, well, sorry, I do sometimes, you know, because they just sync up so crazy sometimes. But I think of, I don't know, I think of it as this thing where I'm playing with myself.
Exactly.
But, you know, where apparently my subconscious, you know, the thing is, who would do a crazy thing like put the receipt with my name on it in that book? I mean, who would give a shit? Nobody, except nobody is, of course, Captain Nemo, the subconscious. It's like, I'm fucking with myself.
Do you not also think that it's odd that the receipt was from Ohio?
Oh, yeah, I pointed that out, I think, in my blog, because it's an Ohio-class
but
submarine.
It's also really far from Seattle. Like, what was that person even doing there? The other thing for me that makes it even crazier. Is like, some guy came from Ohio, bought something in Seattle, and went to the library? Like, the whole scenario is kind of crazy.
It's like, he must have had this library book, and he maybe was inspired to do some cartooning work.
What's the actual store that it's from? Is it from a store in Ohio or a store in Seattle?
It's from a store in Seattle called Utrecht. It's an art store.
Is it on, like, Denny Way?
It's on Pike Street, of course.
Sure, Pike Street.
Oh,
yeah.
Albert Pike, yeah. Right, yeah.
We went.
Right.
Shop there lots.
Right, I've been there too. I bought stuff there too. And so, curious, I looked up Utrecht. Well, Utrecht, excuse me, I need to go to my notes.
Yeah, for just one minute.
The Utrecht is named after the Utrecht Psalter, which is a 9th century illuminated Psalter, which is a key masterpiece of Carolingian art. It is probably the most valuable manuscript in the Netherlands, which means underworld. It is famous for its 166 lively pen illustrations, with one accompanying each psalm and the other text in the manuscript. So again, it's like another fucking monomyth, you know. It's got all these illustrations and stories.
From the underworld, of course. Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah. So I thought that was I've overanalyzed this receipt to way too much, but it's the other cool thing is that he's from Columbus, and I thought, you know, the dove represents the dove of consciousness coming down, you know, on a person, and also, you know, discovering the new world. And I think of the blazing world as the new world. So I kind of like that too.
Can I ask just a sort of technical question? The blazing world, you noticed that it was 3D. Did they actually give you 3D glasses with it?
Well, I don't know, because since it's a library book, you know, I don't know.
Have you actually looked at it with 3D glasses?
No, I don't have any around, so I haven't.
Okay. But
I thought it was a pretty...
It's okay. You looked at it four-dimensionally. You don't need 3D glasses.
Yes, apparently. I actually did look at it four-dimensionally. I mean, that's the... And, you know, and right on the very cover here is this, you know, the first image of it is like this hydrogen bomb exploding this temple. And there are these twin pyramids going up in smoke. You know, it's pretty, I'm going, okay, that's definitely 911 going on there. And then there's all these squares that touch on it, you know, on the image too. So it's pretty much got everything in there. There's a whale, lots of whales. Anyway.
Oh, Michael, you missed that at the beginning. Yeah, the Princess of Wales. I just put a post up early this morning. It's insane to me. I guess I wasn't. It's not that important, but I think you'll get a kick out of it. Do you know that Apollo 11, when the pod landed in the water, it was picked up by a Sea King helicopter? So give me your Trident Sea King. Well, apparently, the other day, the exact same day that the Dragon capsule docked with ISS, or ISIS. So the Dragon docked with ISIS the other day, right? The exact same day, the Olympic torch arrived in Wales. Now, Diana, of course, her name means moon goddess. Diana was the princess of Wales, and the flag, I guess that's the Welsh flag, is a giant red dragon.
It's the red dragon,
so
yes.
The Olympic torch arrives in Wales on the same day that the dragon and ISIS are docking. Now, what's all...
And that's an example of a contrived event.
Sure, but
now
check this out. A few days earlier, the torch was brought over from Greece in a Sea King helicopter.
Contrived by whom? The hack.
Yes, exactly. The author it's the worst story ever told. God.
This is what I'm trying to figure out, though. We have these examples of very contrived events. Like you said, that's a contrived story, but Doug, it's ultimately you can play that game to infinity, right? It's contrived. Okay, by whom?
Well, and I think it's interesting that I've been pinging with Odysseus as being Captain Nemo, because they're both named Nobody. And Odysseus has to escape from the cave, which, you know, let's call it Plato's cave. He has to take out the eye of Polyphemus, and Polyphemus is, you know, a one-eyed giant who, and the name means well-known or famous. So, you know, we can look at that as sort of being like the media, right? And I mean, that's sort of how I'm taking it. And then, so I'm thinking about this, and this is when I put on my trident tattoo. And then the very next day, Anonymous takes down, for a little bit, takes down Facebook, which was representing, you know, Polyphemus. And, you know, I'm glad, I look at my tattoo and I go, whoa, don't know my own strength here. It was very funny.
In the Odyssey, Odysseus, he says, what is your name? And he says, no man, right? No man. So he's like, no man is in here. No man is killing me. That whole shtick. Do you take this as a sort of ego death? Like, to escape the cave, he sort of had to let go of his identity?
Perhaps. You know, that I've thought of that, and that might be a way to think about it. But the thing I wanted to bring up is that in your story, Look at All the Happy Creatures, the kind of the ultimate villain is the media, and the head of it is named Diana. So I thought that was kind of freaky. And who was the most famous woman in the whole fucking world? Diana.
Yeah. Well, it's funny is what I realized is that, so that, in all fairness, I pulled an Alan Moore in Happy Creatures. The woman, the head of the media, her name is Diana Christensen, which is the same name as the character from Network. If you've ever seen the movie Network, the woman who runs mm-hmm. that network is named Diana Christensen, spelled the same way. I did that throughout the book. There are a few characters that are names from other things. There's like the military general is his name is Ratched. So he's a guy, but it's like Nurse Ratched from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. And they're like things like that where the little things dropped in. What's interesting though, what I realized is like once I just liked that name and then I thought about it and basically her name, Diana Christensen, is like basically like Diana Christchild. How is that any different than a moon child, right? Like a sort of, if Diana is the moon, it's sort of moon Christchild or moon, you know. Yeah, mm-hmm. I think if you follow it's not.
And that's why everybody thinks Prince William is going to be the Antichrist or perhaps the Christ.
Right.
we'll see. So it's just way, it's really wacky. Yeah. I was thinking about Neil Armstrong because he was actually the first man on the moon, to the moon. Well, maybe, you mean, mythically anyway. And I thought that he represented a moon child also.
Oh my God, I just thought about his name. You want to talk about paranoia? I just thought about his name. Think about his name for a minute. You're kneeling to a strong arm tactic. Neil Strongarm, right? Like Neil. Sorry, yeah. That was like a really silly, but kind of like wait a second. Yes, he is a sort of moonchild. Just the other day on Always Record, Doug and Bill Klaus were talking, and Bill had mentioned this idea that we were sort of all moon children now. He said that he gave the idea that there was, for thousands of years, everyone had this idea of longing to go to the moon. And then we actually went there, or, you know, if you want to go conspiratorially, we didn't go there, whatever. But regardless, every generation since, and I would include myself in that, and is we grew up with it being normal that of course we could go to the moon, like it was not a thing. So that it represented this sort of shift in consciousness, this huge generational gap of instead of the moon is this sort of unreachable goal of it was sort of a given, and that from that right. point on, we were the generation of moon children that we represented that drastic shift in thinking.
Mm-hmm.
I don't.
Yeah, that's very true though.
Yeah, I thought that was a really awesome thought. So how does in We Extraordinary Gentlemen, what happens with the Moon Child? The world doesn't end apparently.
Oh no, it's so depressing. The Mina, who you know is sort of like the bride of Dracula, which you know she has to wear this scarf around her neck because she got bit by you know the king of the underworld again, and so I think of her as maybe a Persephone resonator. Anyway, she gets dragged down to the underworld again by the end of this thing. It's like she's they're told by Prospero who's from the Blazing World that they have to do something about the Antichrist or stop the Antichrist from this moon child from being born. And so through this whole storyline, you can see them not really understanding what's going on. And they actually help cause the thing that they don't want to happen accidentally. And so there's all this, you know, it's like really shitty. And by the end, we don't actually have an Antichrist yet, but Crowley has taken over the body of another magician, and Mina's gone crazy and was taken away in a van and probably to an insane asylum. We don't know. And then the two heroes are like sitting in a bar in the 80s, and one's like an addict and the other one is just like this angry, pissed off dyke type, and everything's very dark, and you know they just sit and they just go, why did everything go so bad? And they're going, no, it's because we let Mina down, you know, she'd only come back. If only Mina would come back. And then that was the end.
Oh, wow.
It was like fucking depressing.
So Mina, of course, is that sort of dark lady. You know, we could take it as Black Madonna or something like that, this sort of queen of the underworld. As you said, definitely a Persephone resonator. So is that again all of us hitting the same sort of note at the same time, where we're all trying to get Persephone back? We're waiting.
Yeah, I think so, because you know this whole Veronica crap, you know, and the marriage of Betty and Veronica, and I mean on and on with Jason and you know the drowned girl. Another, you know, Persephone, and trying to get her back seems to be right on the money.
So then what's the answer? This is okay. That's what's so great. It's like, I tried to find peace at the end of Winter's Labyrinth in that, that all you can do after the whale eats the boat is know. That there's nothing you could do about the whale eating the boat. And so you just have to be. It's like, so you know at the beginning of the movie that she's going to die.
Right.
But you're still going to have to play your role. You know, it's like a never-ending story where it gets so bad, but that was the only way to pull the little boy into the story. And so he was like pissed off at the end. It's like, well, my horse, you know, why did we have to go through that? I didn't want our text to die. But, you know, then the little girl named Moonchild says, well, that's, you know, the only way you would participate unless we dragged you through the swamps of sadness.
Yeah. What when he has to give her a new name. What is the name?
Moonchild. Literally?
Oh, of course.
Like,
I think he screams, Moonchild! And that's what resets the Matrix or creates,
right, okay.
Creates the universe anew.
Right, okay, okay. Fuck.
And, like, so, are we trying to... Can we save her? That's the thing. Should we... You know, so if Alan Moore is saying, you know, if we could just get Nina back, you know, in my own little microcosm, it's like, I'm trying to come to terms with this. Either she's dead or it's a lifelong fight. How do I fight the free man? I'm not free.
Right, I know.
I'm having my Chief Joseph. I can fight no more forever. You know, or it's like, I can't be two ridges, I'm going to break. You know, the wind's blowing, I'm just going to have to just bow in the wind and let the storm pass over me. So I you know, I don't psychically break.
Right. And it's easy to break, you know? We're pretty fragile, you know?
But anyway, everyone's starting to, the noise and it's ratcheting up in my house this morning as we're moving towards the afternoon.
Sure. And I think I should probably hang up and try to push buttons and
right
turn gears and all that stuff that I have to do.
Back to work for all of us.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming on today, Michael. It was great.
Well, you're very welcome, and thank you for asking me. I really enjoyed it. I hope we made some sort of sense. I always, you know, we just go off on this crap, and it's just like, you do have to be crazy to even follow us. It's true.
Yeah, I just want to say is I felt what Doug said before of, like, having that feeling of, okay, this is crazy. I don't want to be doing this anymore. I don't even want to be associated with this anymore. I had that feeling like a week and a half ago. I was just like, oh my God, I'm done. That's it. And
it's like, we are the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. And we,
you are my people. This is what's so hard. It's like, okay. You know, it's like when I talk to you guys, it's like, oh yeah, you're right. There, I'm home again. These are the people I need to be around because they make sense to me.
Exactly. So it's like, and who are the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen? But all these, you know, dark underworld types, you know, they actually live in the abyss, so to speak. So
I guess, yes,
if you have to be in the abyss, I can't imagine being there with better comrades.
Yeah. Wonderfully said. Thank you so much. It's always good to talk to you, Michael.
And you
too. I really
too.
Can't wait to see both of you in Boise.
I know, me too. Me too. It should be a lot of fun.